You really want to know what love is?
Yeah.
Yes, tell us. More than anything in the world, Ron.
Well, it's really quite simple. It's kind of like... Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night? When everything's a little clearer in the light of day, and we know the night is always gonna be there anyway. Thinking of you's working up my appetite, looking forward to a little afternoon delight. Rubbing sticks and stones together, making sparks ignite, and the thought of loving you is getting so exciting. Sky rockets in flight. Afternoon delight.
You guys have it, I think.
Afternoon delight.
I don't know, Ron. That sounds kind of crazy.
Sounds like you have mental problems, man.
Yeah, you got mental problems, man.
Yeah, it really does.
Man.
Afternoon delight.
Hey, what's it? What's going on? Usually there's a drum thing and a deep voice guy saying something about the show being pre-recorded and yada, yada, yada. But it's not. It's not here. What's happening? Hey, it's... Bob. I'm Bob. Bob Zeska here. It's the bubble genius Bob and insert name here show. So, oh, by the way, that the open there was appropriate to what I've been doing on the blog for the last 2 weeks or so, which is playing exclusively my favorite songs from movies in the morning. I thought I'd include that here. From Anchorman. So, Elvis is not here. And I wanted to inform you that he will no longer be here. Elvis Dingledean has quit the show. I jotted down on my notes for the show the one sentence, Elvis has left the show. Elvis has left the building. But I won't say that. Oh, I did anyway. I know you're moaning. That was sort of silly. Nevertheless, I was just informed maybe about an hour and a half, 2 hours ago, that for personal reasons, Elvis Dingledean will no longer be doing this podcast. So, you know, I don't know where to exactly begin about this, but obviously I have some things to say. And, you know, I think at the very outset, I wanted to say that I wish him the very best. He's a great friend. And, you know, we've been working together, whether it was here on the podcast for the last year and a half or on the blog going all the way back to 2008. Elvis Dingledean started as a commenter on the blog and was... those of you who read the blog regularly know he's thoroughly entertaining, and so it was a no-brainer to invite him to sort of the level of being an actual blogger and contributor to the blog. And then once I got to know Elvis, it became quite clear that he and I had a considerable number of things in common. You know, beginning with sort of our background, you know, we're about the same age. He's a little older, but we're both from the Washington, D.C. area. We grew up literally within about a mile of each other and didn't meet until we were nearly 40, which was strange. But that's true. And you know, he lived more in the Lake Braddock area. I was in the Woodson School District in Northern Virginia. And, you know, we had very similar backgrounds, our dad being in government, our dads being in government, and we both really, you know, had a lot of things in common in terms of what we did and the activities we engaged in the Northern Virginia area, and primarily listening to the Don and Mike show, which began on WAVA in Washington and then moved on to WJFK. And I actually worked on that show for about a year, And he had actually heard me on that show and didn't know that that was me until we met up on the blog in 2008. So lots of serendipity, lots of weird coincidence and things in common there. And so once he started doing the blog regularly, you know, this whole idea of a podcast came up. Around the time I had been doing a podcast with Lee Stranahan and and Elvis had been doing a show of his own called Drunken Soliloquy, which really was a drunken soliloquy. And so a couple of times he had me on his show and we seemed to have a really good, you know, sort of verbal rapport. And it became obvious that, you know, when the opportunity came up to do a podcast, you know, a weekly radio style show, you know, sort of inspired by our mutual radio heroes, Don and Mike, combined with obviously lots and lots of politics, you know, we would work together in that format too. And you know, I didn't spend a whole lot of time in radio. I think between college and for about 5 years after college, you know, all told maybe 8 years in radio. And I worked with a lot of different people in that span of time, both as sort of, there would be a news guy on the other side of the glass who I would banter with, or, you know, I did a daily morning show, at my college radio station, and I had a radio partner there, and it was sort of a Bob and whoever show. And then other formats like that, where it was sort of a team show. And I don't think I'd ever had the same kind of rapport with anyone else. And I'm talking in a professional format. And mind you, Elvis had never done broadcasting ever. I mean, never. I mean, until he started doing his Drunken Soliloquy show, he had never been in that sort of live extemporaneous format. And so, you know, it was clear to me that this guy is not only insanely talented, but also just really, really damn good when it comes to making with the talking. And someone who I still do lots in common with, and we could have spontaneous banter on just about anything. And I, you know, going into a show and feeling confident that this guy could, you know, I could send anything his way, regardless of topic or you know, whether it was pop culture or politics or what have you, that I knew and was confident that he could, you know, hold his own. And obviously bring so much extra that I could never do by myself. And so, you know, so all of that said, you know, it's kind of a shame that he has to move on. But that's, there's no way of getting around that. That's just, he's made a decision. He's made a big move. He's lives in a different state now, and you know, so do I. And so we are, maybe our schedules kind of diverged a little bit. I don't know how much that has to do with it, but nevertheless, I wish him all the best, and you know, thank him thoroughly and completely for contributing so much of his time and his talent and energy to this show. And so, you know, It's not going to be the same. The show is going to be different. You know, I'll be featuring guest co-hosts until I can find a replacement for that spot. I don't foresee doing this show by myself. I mean, I was able to sort of fudge my way through a couple of weeks ago, but it's just, you know, it's just too much. If there were commercials, if there were regular commercials, you know, like they do in broadcast radio, there's a commercial in the talk format at 20 minutes after, 30 minutes after, maybe another one at quarter till, and then a last set closer to the top of the hour, and building in breaks where you can kind of take a breath and recover and turn the page and continue speaking, or if there were songs, even if there were songs, which becomes next to impossible in a podcast format. But nevertheless, if that was the case, then I could really maybe give it a go and then, you know, fill in the blanks with guests, interviews and things like that. But, you know, it's just not my style. I like a spontaneous type of conversation, and having a co-host to bat ideas around with is the format I'm most comfortable with. And, you know, I mean, being a little self-deprecating, it's also, you know, a crutch. So what can I say? But the show will go on, and Bubble Genius is still on board, bubblegenius.com, as the sponsor of the Bob and show. I don't know what the hell to call it. Actually, you know what? Speaking of Bubble Genius, they came up with a bunch of suggested names for the show, and I just wanted to run those by you. Maybe you think, you know, weigh in on Twitter or on the blog if you like any of these. They suggested the Bob Seska Radio Hour. They suggested Bob Seska's Awesome Podcast. Bubbling Over with Bob. Hot Topics with Bob. Bob Seska Takes on the World. Bob Counter Bob. Now, this is an interesting concept. Bob Counter Bob, they suggested I find someone, not only a co-host, but a co-host who was also named Bob. So that it would be two Bobs debating each other. Get it? Also, Bob Seska Comes Clean, Meet the Bob, or Face the Bob. The World According to Bob. Supercalifragilistic Seska-lialidocious. Or Inherit the Bob. So, I don't... I'll take all of those into consideration, is the polite response. But nevertheless, Bubble Genius will be continuing to sponsor the show as the exclusive, what we'd like to call the title sponsor of the show. So it will be always, as long as they wish it to, it will always be the Bubble Genius Bob and blah, blah, blah show, or some other other clever name will go in there. But first, I mean, mainly what we have today in the section of the title of the show is Ches Pazienza is going to join us today. And finally, I think we've got it worked out with Skype that Ches is actually audible and we can actually hear him. Ches, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for that really great lead. And Elvis was a really terrific guy. Now here's this second-rate, also-ran douche filling in for him.
Yeah,
Elvis is holed up in the Sober Valley Lodge with two chicks right now. Let's bring in Ashton Kutcher. He'll take his place. No problem.
Yeah, he's the greatest guy in the world. And now, Ches, live up to that.
Exactly. That's all right. You know, it's about time that happened to me because I've been through so many marriages and usually the wives go on to better lives and I'm the one who flounders. So it's about time I got to pick up the pieces of somebody else's broken life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, I've never been in a position. I've been in lots of positions, and I'm sure you have too, where you've departed a place and or been fired in some way. And we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But I mean, I've never been in a position where a partner on a show has left the show. So how do you make that transition? And I guess the only way to do it is in a really, really awkward fashion.
You bring in John Roberts and Kieran Chetri, and that's that solves your problem right there.
So for people who aren't entirely familiar with you, I say to them, what is their problem? They need to get with
it. Chances are you were married to me at some point.
Get in the loop.
At least one out of every three women, I think, in the United States is married to me at some point.
So you had actually a suggestion for what we should do with the show moving forward.
I did?
Yeah, yeah. You suggested a co-host.
Oh, no, no, no. You know what? I caught so much crap when I gave poor Lee, backhanded, slapped him on your blog a while back. I'm not going to go off on Lee. I'm really not. God bless him. You know, him and Breitbart, they're good pals now. I'm not getting in the middle of that love fest.
Oh, see, that's so disappointing. Yeah, you were going to say, so you're suggesting, though, that I maybe not contact Lee Stranahan to.
No, I definitely would not suggest that. No, you two have very little in common these days. You're sane, as far as I know. I said I was not going to make fun of Lee, and I'm not going to make fun of him. He's a very likable guy.
So I think the consequence of that is then, of course, I would start drinking again.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And I don't necessarily want that.
Why did you stop drinking? Who does that?
Oh God! You know, I had a martini last night, which was rare. But it was good. It was a good martini.
Excellent, Very, very cool. I like the kind of Fox send-off that you gave to Elvis, too. The we wish him well, the kind of faux genteel fuck you that they're so good at. You know, you should have just tacked on there. You know, Elvis is we wish him really luck with that hamster raping case he's got against him. But we wish him well. Good luck with your life there, Elvis.
Oh, see now. Yeah, you've made me look totally transparent. Thank you.
Right. Exactly. File a press release that totally backhanded compliments him.
So, well, I mean, you mentioned John Roberts. So let's sort of fill in the blanks for people who haven't necessarily heard of you. First of all, you run one of the best blogs on the internet, in my opinion. And I say that because
which is honestly like saying that you're the toughest guy at the Erasure concert.
The blog is called deusexmalcontent.com. And I am constantly looking at your blog for ideas. I'm not afraid to admit that that is actually the case. And a lot of times...
It's a dearth these days.
Yeah. Well, you've been insanely busy these days. Huh?
I have, yeah. But, well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate it. I appreciate the compliment. Yeah, I started the blog 5 years ago. I celebrated my big fifth anniversary with lots of hoopla that pissed off one of my ex-wives in particular. Because I got into details about our relationship that I'm not going to feel bad about it, but whatever. It was what it was. Because I do tend to write about a lot of personal stuff. But yeah, I've been doing the blog for 5 years. During that time, I've obviously lost a wife, lost a job, because I worked at CNN for a while. I was working there when I started it. And
now get into that. What exactly you were the producer.
I was a producer. I was a senior producer on American Morning.
Okay. CNN, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, CNN, they're easy to pick on. Most cable news is. And you know, everything that Jon Stewart says is true. And I actually wrote about it at one point. I've written about it at several points. But even before I lost my job at CNN, I kind of went into detail at one point about how Stewart, without saying where I worked, saying, you know, Stewart tends to mock the things about us that, you know, it used to be years ago that when CNN screwed up, when a tape went wrong or, you know, somebody did something silly on the air, there was a flub, that was worth making fun of. But now it's okay to mock our, you know, their intentional absurdity. And that's kind of what wound up happening. And I got really aggravated about it. So I started writing about it. And of course, that you know, that inevitably got me shit canned, even though I never mentioned where I worked. You know, and I honestly did not do much when it came to posting blind items about where I was working. I would talk a lot about, you know, I have since the beginning written about what television news is all about and sort of the inside information that I have, having been in it for 20 years. But I never really got into detail about, you know, hey, I work at CNN or anything like that. But either way, they weren't pleased with the fact that I was writing behind the scenes, even though I wasn't making any money doing it. So yeah, eventually back in 2008, they canned me for it. So, you know.
And you had written about you had written about them on your blog or on the Huffington Post or both?
I'd written about them on the blog. I mean, they when I got canned, I had actually started writing for the Huffington Post all of maybe a month before I got canned by CNN, before they called me in and said we're getting rid of you. Because we found your name attached to some controversial blog posts. But the blog posts they said they found that were so controversial were specifically my own. They were from the blog. They're from Deus Ex Malcontent. And nobody mentioned anything about Huffington, which, you know, maybe that's true, maybe it isn't. But either way, you know, it makes for better copy to say that my blog cost me my job, which it did, actually, you know. So I've gone on since then, and we press on.
Yeah, and you're obviously you landed on your feet. I mean, you're still working in media. I mean, a lot of times what happens is if you cross someone in media, you get instantly blacklisted, and they kind of follow you around.
Oh, I mean, I have no doubt that, you know, I mean, I'm not working in television news, you know, I have not even bothered trying it, you know, really trying it out. I mean, you know, I did a little bit of freelance production, freelance TV news production for a while, but actually trying to get back into a newsroom, I haven't even, you know, I haven't really made, you know, I think I wanted to initially because I was just so scared because, you know, obviously it's something I had done my whole life. And then all of a sudden I kind of napalmed my career. And I think I was a little bit nervous. And I thought like, well, I should probably just, you know, put my tail between my legs and swallow my pride and go beg somebody for a job back. But, you know, yeah, I did get on my feet and I started doing other things. And now I'm basically just doing television production. The thing that's kept the blog so dull lately is that I'm up to my ass right now in writing a I'm writing and producing a show for DIY Network.
Oh, great.
Which is hysterically funny because, you know, the most DIY thing I've ever done when it comes to having something go wrong around the house is you pick up the phone and call either the landlord or whoever will come out and fix that shit for you. I never in a million years would I attempt to fix anything at all in my home. But yeah, I'm doing an episode of Turf War, which is one of those shows that Hassan is on. He's like one of their big stars, and he's on a bunch of shows. One of them is Turf War, where they pit two neighbors against each other to like fix their backyards, and you know, one of those makeover shows. They do it in like in 2 days. So it's a lot of tape to go through. It's a lot to have to deal with, and I'm trying to put it all together and do it by deadline. But Ahmed also hosts a couple of other shows, one of which is Yard Crashers, which is the best idea for a show ever. Uh-huh. A guy named you know, basically it's he approaches people and offers to make over their, you know, re-landscape their backyard. So what you have essentially is a guy named Ahmed Hassan who walks up to strangers in a hardware store carrying two big bags of fertilizer, and he says to them, "I want to go to your house right now." What can possibly go wrong with that premise?
And does anyone ever react by tackling them down,
you know,
or calling Homeland Security what?
I've heard that they do. I haven't seen it for myself. I'm dealing only with Ahmed when it comes to this particular show, and eventually I may wind up doing one of the Yard Crasher shows. But I mean, it's a cool gig. You know, it's for a good production company, and you know, writing and producing reality TV is you know, there are different levels of it. And it's funny because the irony is that I for the most part I bitch incessantly about reality TV on the blog because I don't. I generally don't like it, but
now be careful. Be careful, Chez.
No.
Chez,
no,
be careful.
This is a. I mean, I was very honest about that. I mean, this is a procedural show, though. Procedural shows are fun. They are. You know, I mean, yeah. It's like I said, it's a makeover show. It's not like I'm not doing, you know, the Real Housewives of wherever the fuck. You know, with people who I you know, I look at and I just want to see them all die. So.
Right.
But it's a cool gig, and that's one of the things that I'm doing. I'm also doing PR. These days, and I'm not going to get into who my clients are with that because that has to remain a no, I'm not kidding. That has to remain a secret.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, I mean, it's kind of cool. I've been doing a bunch of little things here and there, and while none of it is, you know, it's the life right now for somebody who's in media. While none of it is full time, you know, it pays the bills and it's really interesting. And I get to kind of make my own hours and work from home, and I get to spend more time with my daughter, which is great.
Yeah.
So it's nice, you know, yeah. So that's life now.
Well, that's, I mean, it's always a little dangerous, and, you know, I was kind of joking there, but you're not shy about talking about your real life on the blog. And that's one of the things that makes it so compelling. I mean, you're extraordinarily honest. I mean, you wrote, sort of a memoir and, yeah. And you're distributing now as sort of a digital book, or call it an ebook or whatever. But as you know, sort of a companion to that, you're very, very revealing on the blog, and at the same time, you know, you also talk about, you know, topicality, things happening in politics and pop culture and things like that, and also I might add impeccable taste in music. But at the same time, but
and
I mean,
you as well.
Do you ever stop when you go to post something? Do you ever stop and go, you know what? Do I really want to put this out there? Do I really want to reveal this side?
I do it. I do it all the time. Like I said, I caught, you know, I won't go my attitude at this point. I promised that I was putting this particular saga behind me. So my attitude is if you want to actually, if it's really that important to you that you learn about it, go like to last month at the end of last month on the blog, and you can read all about it. But yeah. No, you know, I mean, when my last marriage fell apart, I wrote a little bit about it without going into too much detail. And lately I just, you know, I felt like, you know, it's cheaper than therapy to write about it. So I kind of wrote a little more about what happened during my marriage. And, you know, I hope I fessed up to a lot of the awful shit that I did, 'cause I'm not perfect. But yeah, I did reveal quite a bit of the stuff that my ex did and that we did together, you know, a lot of the places where we both went wrong, and how it affected me. Yeah. And, you know, she's less than pleased about it because obviously I'm revealing stuff about her personal life. And, you know, it's kind of weird for me because while we were together, I would write a lot about our personal lives. I didn't use us as, you know, like fodder, but I would a lot of times talk about my relationship with this person, as it, you know, sort of use it as a mirror to reflect some of the other things I had done in the past, which being with my ex was a really great experience for the most part because, you know, she was somebody I cared about very much. And I was, you know, trying to get over, quite frankly, a life of really, really atrocious behavior. So I felt very lucky to have her. And, you know, when things went bad, you know, I copped to the things that were my fault. And there was a hell of a lot that was her fault. Which is rare for me to say, because usually it's like, oh no, it's all my fault, and I know it. Fuck that, you know, I'm the jackass.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, so maybe it's not all that daring to reveal other people's secrets, but like I said, I did it really more from the perspective of how what happened affected me. I didn't do it like, I certainly wasn't out to get any kind of revenge. I wasn't just going, you know what, fuck her, I'm going to teach her a lesson. It wasn't anything like that. It was just, you know, what happened in my marriage had a real serious, a really profound effect on me, and it continues to. It left me with a legacy of distrust, and it really messed me up. it did. I mean, big time. So, you know, so yeah, I wrote a little bit about that, and as you referenced, I wrote a memoir that dealt with a particular time in my life where I was, you know, another really, really bad relationship, actually. But I was on drugs because I was stupid. And I had gotten out of rehab, and 9/11 happened right after I got out of rehab. So I went up to New York to kind of cover 9/11. And the book sort of deals with how I was trying to rebuild my life after everything fell apart. And that was all my fault. You know, I'm always the first one to say, oh yeah, you know, dick here, you know, made the big mistake. So yeah, so it was kind of about that. But yes, I do tend to share, but I'm hoping anyway, and I could be totally wrong about this, and I open myself to all kinds of criticism that maybe I deserve. You know, the big word, the big blogging word from like 5 years ago, oversharing. I'm hoping I'm not somebody who's just like navel gazing and like, you know, doing it just for the sake of doing it. I mean, I hope somebody's getting, I hope I talk in universal themes and that somebody's getting something out of it. Otherwise, yeah, it's just masturbation.
Well, yeah,
I do enough of that already.
What you're able to do is you're able to weave all of that personal narrative together with politics and music. And I think that creates a compelling mix that isn't exclusively you discussing your personal life. I think what you have a really strong balance, and that's what
it's as it it's makes all your blog bullshit. So compelling. I'm actually an 82-year-old woman from Fresno. everything you've seen on the blog is totally fake. It's an entirely made up character. This is a voice synthesizer thing. Yeah. My name is Irma. I live in Fresno. Somebody bring me my fucking latte.
Well, it just it takes such massive balls to be able to put your life out there like that. I mean, I just went through a divorce myself, I think that experience, I mean, most of it happened last year, and throughout that time, you know, I'm doing the blog and doing the podcast, and no one knew.
Right.
Exactly right.
No, I get it. I actually thought it was kind of weird when everything went south, it kind of felt like I was cheating. You know, I owed the audience technically nothing. And the cool thing is, for the most part, my readers know that. They're not jerks about it. They're not like, you know, fuck you. You, you know, you need to tell us all about your life. They're generally pretty good about it. I've been the one who's offered up, you know, tidbits here and there. But I did kind of feel like I would be cheating if I had been very open about my life up until the point where everything went to shit, and then suddenly I was that asshole demanding privacy. Please give me my privacy during this, this, you know, important time in my life. This is difficult. So I didn't, like I said, I didn't do anything to hang anybody out to dry, but I did talk a little bit about what I was going through, because once again, it's cheaper than therapy. And that was my therapy I wrote because I had to express it somehow, and I didn't really know where else to turn. So, but I did actually, you know, now that you bring it up, I can go ahead and probably say here somewhat unequivocally that relationship-wise, it probably ends, and actually work-wise to a certain extent, I think I've drawn a line now that I've closed the saga of my last serious relationship, my marriage. I'm not going to get involved with someone else again and have that person turn that person into material for the blog or anything like that. And while I put up pictures of my daughter because, you know, I love my daughter to death and, you know, I like the pictures of her, I also don't want her to be, you know, she's not a character. And these people who have been in my life are not characters. And I'm not going to – I think I've kind of learned an important lesson about not wanting to take anybody who gets close to me and, you know, pull a Truman Capote on them and make them terrified to say anything around me for fear that I might turn around and go, ooh, well, that's great shit for the blog.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever get because you do. I mean, you do, you know, post about your daughter and not only that, but also with photos and things like that. I mean, do you ever get any freak dogs who, you know,
I haven't yet.
Say anything weird?
No, I haven't yet. I mean, one of the reasons, and I'm not saying that they won't come out of that there's isn't the potential for them to come out of the woodwork at some point, but I'm a mean son of a bitch. You know, I am. I'm not. You know, I don't just post pictures and, oh, look at how sweet. I mean, all of that is, you know, that really niceness is cut with 100% just, you know, virulent venom. You know, and anybody who reads some of the other posts that I put up, you know, I'm not saying you don't want to fuck with me, but, you know, it's not just the stuff that I'm not all sweetness and light. And I think people know that and know, certainly they know that I'm capable of nothing else of probably tearing them an asshole. Not that that'll go all that far, but also, you know, if I have to call the cops or something, I'll totally do it.
Yeah.
I'm not above running to the people, you know, people with guns for help, you know, look, you know, not, oh, woe is me. I knew what I was getting myself into, but yeah, look, the blog cost me a job. To some extent, it probably cost me a marriage, you know, at least a little bit.
But she had to have known. I mean, she knew what you were all about. She knew about the blog.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know how, and I don't mean to get too therapeutic here, but, you know, it shouldn't come as any surprise that you're going to talk about.
No. It didn't. And once again, you know, there was a period there where she was really, really supportive. And you know, I don't know how supportive she genuinely was or whether it was just sort of a front that she was putting on. But regardless, you know, a show of support is a show of support. So it helped me and it was nice. You know, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, you don't slam somebody for everything. You always point out the good things. And there were absolutely good things. Yeah, you know, I mean, it was all, like I said, it was always more important for me to speak my mind and be who I am and say the things I want to say. And, you know, have I probably risked lost quite a bit and risked, you know, certainly a future in politics. But, you know, no, I mean, maybe even future jobs, maybe future relationships, maybe. But
yeah.
You know what? I'm okay. I am. I'm good with where I'm at right now.
Well, I mean, you're working.
Are you doing this, by the way? Why the hell are you interviewing me?
Yeah, other shit happened, and we got, you know what? Actually, we got to talk about, soap first. So the show is, it still is a show, despite the changes that are afoot. But, and it's still sponsored by Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Best goddamn soap ever. ever.
That's
seriously.
A great tagline.
Yeah. They've got the coolest soap and bath and body products, even some fun political things that you've ever seen, and a brand new commercial this week. Brand new commercial from Bubble Genius.
Ah! Who are you? And what are you doing in my bathroom?
Relax, dude. It's just me. I'm trying on my new mustache soaps for size.
What the?
Yeah, it's my new stash box mustache soaps from Bubble Genius. See? Look at this one. Oh, hello, my darling. Do you admire my sexy stash?
Dude, you're a weirdo.
Nah, it's fun. Here, see for yourself. Try this one on for size.
Oh, fine. Well, howdy, ma'am. Y'all know where I can hitch up my horse at? this is a neat one. I'd like to discuss the molecular structure of soap, please. These soapy stashes are spectacular.
See? I told you. Super fun. And they smell great and lather up like crazy. Those Bubble Geniuses got it going on.
Stashbox Mustache Soaps, a set of four fun soaps for good, clean fun. This and other amazing vegan-friendly bath and body products only from Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants.
Wait.
And haul them around with you wherever you
go.
No,
just me.
Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Indeed, but just me, because Elvis is not on the show anymore. Stick me in your pants all you want. Maybe stick Chez in your pants.
Why not? Everyone else has.
And, you know, I'm beginning to figure out that the bubbles at the beginning and the end of the Bubble Genius commercials, they're not traditional bubbles. They are, you know, bong bubbles. that much was clear in that commercial. By the way, enter promo code Bob and Elvis. It's still effective. BOBANDELVIS. And get 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. We'll hear more from them in a little while. And some more water bong bubbly noises. So there are some things that have occurred in politics, and I wanted to get to a little bit of that today, despite all of the crazy news and things like that. And speaking of, Chez, you used to work at CNN. Cable news, and this is the first thing that I wanted to talk with you about. Cable news is wrong again about the economy. Now, what we've been hearing on MSNBC and CNN, and I don't even watch Fox. I don't know what the hell they're saying on Fox News. But we can
It's depressing.
Yeah. I mean, we pretty much know that what they're doing is blaming the president for the economy. They're basically saying that in addition to owning Afghanistan, President Obama owns the economy and the joblessness and the unemployment and sort of the slow growth of the GDP, et cetera, et cetera. And the Republicans, as we all know, continue to blame the economy on the president as well. And that's partly because of their deliberate amnesia, not recalling anything prior to the inauguration in January 2009. But CBS News and the New York Times just released a poll. It was just Wednesday night, Chez, and what they said and what they discovered is essentially the same results that they've been getting for the last, you know, 2+ years. The question is, who do the American people blame for the slow economy? And here it goes. George W. Bush, 26%. Wall Street and financial institutions, 25%. Congress, 11%. President Obama, 8%. 8%. So, once again, the cable news punditry is very, very wrong. And they want this. I mean, they want to construct this narrative. And it's not, I don't know if you could shed any light on this, Chez, but I don't know if there's sort of a conscious effort or a memo going around saying, here's the script we're going to follow this week. And that goes out to everyone from Howard Fineman to Chris Matthews to John Roberts and all of it. But I don't know that that's the case. But
John
certainly,
Roberts works for Fox, so yes, he's.
Oh,
getting,
that's right, yeah, John Roberts.
He's getting the memo from you know, the bulletproof office of Roger Ailes.
And
so the gays don't get to him.
Yeah, you know what I meant to say, John King.
Oh yeah,
the host of the Republican debate not too long ago.
Right.
Interested in knowing, you know, who Newt Gingrich, which show Newt Gingrich likes more, Dancing with the Stars or American Idol?
Right.
The tough question.
Kind of nonsensical crap that we want to talk about with the country being, you know, on the road that it's on right now. No, I mean, Fox, in spite of what Fox would like you to believe, Fox News really is the only network that I can think of that gets a, you know, an actual memo that says, that starts at the top and works its way down, that says this is the direction that we're going to go in. Other places, though, you know, the media kind of works like dominoes, and it does have sort of an institutional the press has kind of an institutional collective consciousness, an institutional memory. And when one person goes in one direction, a lot of times the others, you know, it's like watching those it's like watching a big flock of birds or fish all move at the same time. It's a miraculous thing to watch. It's a thing of beauty because you're never quite sure how they're doing it, but they somehow do tend to take cues from each other and just kind of run with it. I mean, I've said more than once that really there is only one true bias to the media, and that's conflict. The media love conflict.
Yeah, the drama.
The conflict, the drama, the horse race. It's always bullshit, and they eat it up. And so, blaming it on Obama, especially considering that he was riding high just, you know, what, a month and a half ago?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were singing his praises. I mean, it's the back and forth and the back and forth. It's not a surprise at all that they're jumping on the Obama's to blame bandwagon, because the way the news cycle works these days is nobody can stay high for too long, and when you do, they knock you back down because there's the conflict.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like it's a combination of a couple of things, and the conflict, I believe, stems from what they tried to do. Here's what they tried to do. They tried to come up with a conflict that isn't necessarily make them look like they're taking a side, because as we know, they're extraordinarily self-conscious about seeming too liberal.
They are very much so. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And so they overcompensate by, you know, by saying things like President Obama owns the economy. Which
right.
isn't necessarily true, but the way that meme gets started is not in any sort of formal way outside of Fox, but it's through sort of the DC cocktail party green room kind of chit chat that goes on prior to some of these shows. Is, you know, obviously on the weekends at functions and get to gatherings among, you know, in DC among you know, people in the press and in cable news. And so that's how these things get started. It's very clicky in that way, isn't it?
Extremely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. The Beltway press is terrible. The political press in this country, the mainstream political press, is just awful. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the way you described. It's very, very clicky. It's, you know, like I said, it's this sort of odd little collective, you know, one of us kind of consciousness going on where one person decides something and they talk to another person and it goes like that. There, like you said, you made a really, really good point when you said that that they overcompensate. I've said that for a really, really long time. Anybody who tells you that there is a liberal bias in media, for all I know, there probably are certainly a lot of people with sort of liberal politics working in the media. But two things to keep in mind. Number one, the companies themselves and the people running them are all obviously corporate. These are mammoth media companies now,
right.
And they are absolutely not liberal. So that's, you know, I mean, hold on one second.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that. I don't
kid,
know. That...
My kid is yelling. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Do you need to take care of her?
Mm. No. I'm good.
Okay. I was going to say, I seriously doubt Time Warner or General Electric. I'm trying to think of what one of the other owners are. Westinghouse,
NBC Uni.
Yeah, you know, NBC Universal,
NBC Uni, Comcast is now the biggest media company in the freaking universe.
That's right, and in the case of, I believe ABC is still owned by Disney, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean,
yes,
these aren't liberal corporations.
No, they're not. And what they will do is the people who are what I was getting at was exactly what you said. The people who work maybe behind the scenes who maybe are liberal. The last thing they want to do is be accused of being liberal. They're always aware of that sort of omnipresent accusations of a liberal bias. And what they'll do is they'll overcompensate. You know, I've never been in a meeting where anyone said, well, we have to make sure that we are absolutely 100% fair about this. And when they said that, they meant between left and right. They say that and they mean we want to make sure we're not too liberal on this, you know, because that's how we're always going to come off. I mean, it's amazing to see just how well the right in this country has, you know, how efficient they've been at scaring the living crap out of the press. Yeah. They do it. It's actually a hell of a thing to behold. They've done it very, very well. They're very good at playing the press against itself.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to actually let me go back to what you were just saying. So there's no when they say we want to be fair about this, what they mean is they don't mean to say we need to show the liberal side and the conservative side. We need to show not the liberal side. I mean, this is exclusively targeted in one direction.
Not the liberal side.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, you know, one of the worst things that you see in the news these days, and this is you know, a big picture thing, is this sort of myth that every single thing has to be objective. That if you get, you know, this is where you get the two idiots in separate boxes yelling at each other for no good reason, because every single topic can now be politicized and there can be a left and a right and or a right and a wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and this kind of straw man argument's been used before, but it's actually it's not all that crazy when you think about it. It's gotten to the point now where if you bring on somebody to talk about child molestation, there's a booker who has been pre-programmed behind the scenes to say, okay, I have to now find somebody who is pro-child molestation. Hang on, let me make a couple phone calls. You know, there is no right and wrong. There is no objective yes or no. Everything is up for debate, and that's bullshit.
Yeah, no. There is no – I mean, while there are people who say, for example, climate change is a hoax –
right.
It's not a valid side. Yeah, it's they're fringe, but it's not even based in fact. It is
wrong. Absolutely wrong. It's a lie to portray it. It's almost like, you know, you know, the right who make the argument that that creationism has as many scientists on its side as, you know, that there's some sort of debate about evolution. Yeah. There isn't really. There are one or two psychopaths who don't believe that evolution is, you know, real, who don't believe that evolution actually happened. And then you've got, you know, millions of other scientists who do. And it's the same thing with climate change. And you get these people and you put them on television, and because of the way TV is now set up, where, you know, they've got a 3-minute hole to fill and you can really only invite on two people, it looks like it's a fair argument. It looks like it's a fair fight, and it's not. It's just not.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like – I always think about it this way. It's like, you know, sometimes or at least Newsweek used to do all of these – I mean, it seemed like every other month they were doing a piece, is Jesus real, or let's talk about Jesus. And so it's almost as if – I mean, what if Newsweek were to say, you know, here's an article about Jesus, and we're going to do another article about that guy that stands on the street corner saying that he's Jesus, that he's really Jesus. We're going to put those two side by side and give them equal column inches in our next issue. They don't do that. But when it comes to politics, you know, we've got to have the, you know, obviously the side that has unequivocal scientific background. In the case of climate change, we've got to put that alongside some screeching conspiracy theorist who thinks that because one guy sent an email with weird language in it, that there's some giant, massive global conspiracy to lie about climate change. It just doesn't work that way. You know, just because there's a few fringy, weird people screaming on the virtual street corner doesn't give them credibility to be able
right,
to.
But if you reported that, then you would be accused of being part of the liberal agenda and the liberal bias.
Exactly.
So they have to say somewhere there's a meeting going on where there's, you know, some poor asshole who's sitting in a fishbowl in a newsroom going, okay, you know what, if we don't present this as if it's – and, you know, pardon me, I make it sound as if it's a voluntary thing, and a lot of times it's not. It's a sort of involuntary, like it's just such a deeply ingrained, like, okay, we have to be fair about this. Let's go find one of the other people who debates this. And once again, the right and the left, you know, to be very fair, the left occasionally can do it too. You know, you get really good when you do politics, you get really good at playing the media, and you get really good at playing the other side sort of against itself. Yeah. And people who are great with politics know exactly how to do it. And the right is exceptional at it these days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they've for 40 years now, they've been engaged 40, you know, I would say closer to 50 years. They've been engaged in this coordinated effort to shame the media. I mean, you go back to Spiro Agnew, for God's sake. Spiro Agnew was shaming the media before it was cool to shame the media. And,
absolutely.
You know, and they've spent a lot. The far right has spent a lot of money in this coordinated campaign, not only to infiltrate politics at the local, I mean, at the extreme low, at the school board level, but also to gain a stronghold when it comes to the press, and to the point now where we have the Wall Street Journal is owned by Rupert Murdoch. I mean, how many news outlets does Rupert Murdoch own by himself?
The funny thing about the media is you're gonna lose anyway. You're never going to please that particular demographic that thinks that you're the evil liberal media. You'll never make, no matter what you do, there isn't somebody who is, especially now more than ever, where, you know, everybody who's conservative watches Fox and you don't need to hear another opinion at all. But, you know, you're not going to, if you're really, really hardcore to the right, you're not going to click over to CNN and go, oh, you know what, they put Eric Erickson on. You know, I'm going to give him a chance. that shows that they're trying to speak to me. Yeah. No, you know what? I mean, there are independents, and there's nothing – certainly that's where I sit, and I don't think there's anything wrong. I think that's the place to be. I think you should evaluate each issue on its own merits. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is that the media more than ever is in a position to just do what's right, but they don't do that because they think that somehow they will – you know, they'll win over these people who really, quite frankly, hating them isn't just something that they've been taught to do. I mean, it's they get something out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the right gains something by demonizing the press. And because of that, you're never going to win these. You're never going to win them over. You know, there's power in that. There's authority in demonizing the press.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just much like and this is speaking to a broader issue and obviously a hobby horse of mine. You know, as we talk about getting money out of politics, I think the only way to solve the media, the problems with the news media is taking the money out of journalism again. I mean, to the point where, I mean, certainly there was always money in journalism, but it was always a loss leader. I mean, the news was always
you and Patty Chayefsky.
That's right. Exactly. I'm not shy about Patty Chayefsky's influence on me in the movie Network. But I mean,
that is the single greatest movie about television ever made, and probably will remain that way.
Yeah. Followed up, I think, closely by Broadcast News.
Very, very good movie.
but nevertheless, I mean, I think I don't know how to put that egg back in the shell. I mean, I don't know how the toothpaste goes back in the tube. Other than to, you know, to constantly be diligent about it and to constantly shame members of the media, because now we're living in this social media world where they're all on there and they're all taking it seriously. And the fact that they take criticism seriously is evident in the idea that they have taken the far right so seriously for so long and been shamed into, I think, abrogating their duty as journalists to the point of denying facts and reality for the sake of getting lunatic fringe commentary on the air to create some sort of fake balance. So I think if we continue to shame them, as I, you know, you just go to Twitter and you can see it happening all the time, I think it's possible to get some incremental change to make a difference. I mean, I believe that it was social media that ultimately ended up making it financially untenable for Fox News to continue hosting Glenn Beck.
I think that's probably right. I also think, though, that Beck was such a loose cannon, and he was so interested in – today was his last show, right?
Yeah, I think so.
My head buried in my ass. which actually is an infinitely better view than watching Glenn Beck, by the way. it's funny. One of the things that I've actually always kind of admired a little bit about Fox, I really do like this about them, is that unlike other organizations where they're very, very quick to sort of throw you to the wolves if you make a mistake, if you piss somebody off, if you offend somebody, Fox circles the wagons really. You can only get fired for pissing off for pissing off somebody within Fox. You know, if you upset somebody outside of Fox, they'll circle the wagons and they'll release, you know, I made the joke about the press release earlier. They'll release those kinds of press releases where they go on the attack against you. I think that, yeah, obviously Beck made it very, very difficult for them to keep making money. But I think that if Beck had not really sort of pissed in, you know, down the back of Ailes as much as he did and treat him as if he wasn't, you know, that he could thrive without him, because the one thing Ailes cannot live without, I mean, the Sarah Palin thing is a great example. Mm-hmm. He can't live without the sort of loyalty of his people. And the fact that Beck, almost from day one, was sort of his own entity, I think that that was what ultimately doomed him. You know, even if he'd lost a lot of advertisers, I think that if he had embraced Fox News as a whole and embraced Ailes and embraced that sort of culture of, I am a part of Fox News and I'm not just doing this for myself. Mm. I think that Ailes probably would have really, really gone to the mat for him, and he'd probably still have a show if he wanted it.
Yeah.
I hate to be cynical about it, because I remember I got into a Twitter. I don't believe in Twitter wars. I think
that and yet there you were.
Well, no, I mean, you know, you go back and forth with people on Twitter for 140 characters. It's like, fuck you. You know, I don't have time for that. But I know, you know, Shock, who, great guy, but mm-hmm. you know, Shock, Shock is a guy, right? I don't even know that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. It's a cat. I think Shock is a cat banging on keys.
Yeah, a black cat, right.
If his icon is to be judged. You know, and I mean, he was very sort of proud about the fact that the Stop Beck thing had helped to dethrone Beck. And I thought it was great. I think he or she, and whoever got behind him deserved to take a certain amount of credit for that. Absolutely. But I do believe that before you break your arm patting yourself on the back, and I kind of told him that, I'm like, if he hadn't pissed off Ailes, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd still be there. If Beck hadn't set himself up as an outsider, as, you know, there's Fox and then there's me. And I can, you know, as much as I'm sure he doesn't like Keith Olbermann, Beck was really the Keith Olbermann of Fox News. He was a guy who was very much in it for himself, and even their sort of final send-off shtick, from what I read of Beck's final show today, was very much alike in the sense that I know that obviously Olbermann left a lot quicker, but it was very sort of, you know, me. You know, Beck's a narcissist. Olbermann is too. I think he's a good kind of narcissist. He's a brilliant broadcaster, but actually so is Beck. Beck's a good broadcaster. He's just a tool.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, I mean, I never deny that he's actually an excellent broadcaster. He's just, you know, a raging douchebag.
Yeah, that's the same with Rush Limbaugh. I mean, Rush Limbaugh is a fantastic radio guy. I mean, the guy
he is very, very good. He's very good at knowing how to speak, the correct way to speak, you know, inflection, everything. He's very, very, very good at it.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't change the fact that he's a dick.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I think Beck is multi-causal. I think, as with almost everything else, you know, there are multiple reasons why something happens. I think Beck was a combination of pissing off Ailes. I think Beck was a combination of losing advertisers and declining ratings. I think Beck was also,
His audience was dying daily.
Literally. And
dying right in front of the TV.
And on top of all of that, I don't know, and it's been my theory for quite some time now, that Glenn Beck is mostly a character that Glenn Beck is playing. And so I don't know how sustainable.
I've always said he's doing the best Andy Kaufman since Andy Kaufman.
That's right. You know,
he's doing living performance art. He may as well be Vic, you know, doing his shtick in Vegas somewhere.
There are few people wandering around in broadcasting who can pull off a character in perpetuity. I mean, Stephen Colbert is obviously the best, and he makes no bones about the fact that he's obviously playing a character, and that's part of the idea of it. That's part of the wink and the nudge to the audience that there's Stephen Colbert, and then there's Stephen Colbert. And that's part of the comedy of the show. But, you know, in another sense, you know, there's also Sean Hannity, who I believe also is kind of full of shit. But he is, for some reason, able to perpetuate that. He's like a juggernaut. He just keeps going and going and
Hannity
going.
Hannity is a talking points machine, and that's all he is.
Right.
He doesn't think he will just take whatever, you know, whatever side the conservative side is. It's that simple. And I do actually have some friends at Fox, and, you know, no details or anything like that. But yeah, you know, I've kind of gotten the lowdown on how each person thinks, and you know, and everybody has basically told me, they're like, you know, and it's interesting that I talk about it as if, you know, someone, many Bothan spies died to bring me this information.
Right.
You know, like somebody snuck out of the bunker, which, by the way, the Fox News newsroom is, it's a fucking bunker. It's like underground.
Yeah, it is. It is. You can walk by it in Manhattan, and it is like almost
it's
underground.
On 6th
Ave. It's like what? Like 5 feet below street level.
Yep. Yeah. It's the newsroom is actually windowless. It has, as far as I know, I didn't see any. I've been inside of it. I've been inside the fortress and survived.
Yeah. I saw the Fox and Friends studio, which is actually, it is lower than street level. It is, you're kind of looking down on it through that big plate glass window.
Right.
And so it is, it is a bunker. Yeah.
But yeah, but, you know, no, it's. The place is there's nothing quite like it. I mean, there really isn't.
Well, I wanted to turn the page to actually MSNBC and talk about this before we run out of time.
Right.
The big media news from this morning was Mark Halperin, who's one of my favorite guys in all of cable news, and I say that obviously with lots and lots of snark and sarcasm. I don't have much respect, if any, for Mark Halperin. In fact, I think he's one of the biggest hacks in cable news.
He is the definition of a hack. He really is. There's very few people out there fit that word just perfectly, and Halperin is a fucking hack.
And he first caught my attention in 2008. This is when I first noticed him. He used to write a column for Time Magazine. He used to be an editor at Time Magazine. And he wrote a column called Halperin's Take. And it was like Halperin just hacking it up, just douching it up on Time Magazine. And
Halperin loving the sound of his own voice.
That's right. And he's just kind of he's a flaky sort of nothing douchey kind of white bread guy. I mean, there's nothing really.
He's a smarmy beltway cocktail party prick.
There you go. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so the guy
you don't want to be stuck at the valet stand with for any length of time while they're, you know, getting your car at whatever Georgetown fucking bar you're at.
Well, he wrote this thing in Halperin's Take back in 2008, where he recommended a series of things for the McCain campaign, whereas he did it also for the Obama campaign, too, just to be fair. But he did a series of recommendations for the McCain campaign, things that they could do to win the election. And number 11 was, quote, emphasize Barack Hussein Obama's unusual name and exotic background through a Manchurian candidate prism. Mark Halperin is single-handedly responsible for mainstreaming the early birther movement. I mean, you really want to go back to origins here? Yeah, there were those emails that were circulating around, those viral emails saying who is Barack Obama and kind of, you know, making up all the bullshit about his birth certificate and his name and Kenya and all that. But it was Mark Halperin who mainstreamed it. I mean, this guy brought all that whole idea and actually recommended that John McCain exploit Hussein and paint Barack Obama as being a terrorist who is going to infiltrate the White House. I mean, that's the Manchurian candidate prism. This is Mark Halperin, the guy who was on Morning Joe every damn day now. Every day
he's on. The guy who wrote everyone's favorite Beltway Insider little fucking tool fest every morning, the note for maybe
the note. That's right. And then he also co-wrote one of the worst books ever written about politics, which is Game Change. The thing, yeah, I mean, there's no index. There are no citations. I don't believe, I want to say there aren't any footnotes in the entire thing. There's no citations of this information.
When you're Mark Halperin, you are the footnote. So you don't have to actually cite anybody or offer any references or attribution because, well, you're.
Yeah.
Fuck you, I'm Halperin.
Yeah. That's right. So this book is like Halperin and Heilman just douching it up. Just like, hey, look at all the shit we know. Look at all the stuff we found out. We can't prove any of it, but look at it. Isn't it great?
Yeah, it's name dropping crap.
Yeah.
And it's everything that, you know, it's the disease that infects the Beltway press.
Yeah.
Just this self love, this self indulgence. This, you know, we're in the know and you just need to shut up and trust us. And yeah, I mean, you know, I used the word a couple minutes ago, but smarmy. It's mm-hmm. just Halperin is just a smarmy bastard.
That's right. That's right. And the book is getting made into an HBO movie, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So it does get, you know, it's all of that douchery is getting preserved forever on film, which is great. Great news.
And it's a nice size check for Halperin.
That's right.
Deserve it all.
Vindicates Halperin, gives him more. Yeah. Vindicates and validates his ridiculous hackery. But so getting down to it, what happened this morning is they were talking about the president's press conference. And which I think was great. I think the president was forceful. He was strong. He challenged compared the Republicans to children, basically. He said, my daughters finished their homework. Why can't these guys finish their work on time? And, you know, so I thought it was a fantastic performance, not going into too much detail about it because it is kind of old news at this point. But then they started talking about it on Morning Joe this morning. And I'm going to cue up the sound here. This is what happened. This is the.
Are we in the 7-second delay today?
Oh, Lordy. No.
I wanted to characterize how I thought the president behaved.
How do you think you
behaved? Well, we have it. Use it, right, Alex?
Yeah, sure.
That's Mark Halperin saying, I want to characterize how the president behaved. So let's continue here.
Sure, come on.
Yeah.
Take a
go
chance.
Go for
F-A.
It. Yeah, let's see what happens.
Alex, I'm behind you. You fall down. I'm going to catch you.
And the president has been set on the show.
Okay, sorry. Go
so
ahead.
We're good.
I thought he was kind of a dick yesterday.
Oh
my God. Delay that. Delay that. What are you doing?
I think the president.
I can't believe you. I was joking. Don't do that.
Yeah, and there's Joe hanging his ass right out to dry.
Right.
I'm standing right behind you. Oops, dickhead.
Yeah, sorry. Wait, I didn't ask you to do that. And just a second ago, please say it. Please say it.
Exactly. And I love that he's kind of a dick.
That's right.
I'm about to be a little bit ribald. Hold on, everyone.
He's a little bit like George Bush Senior meets Fred Rogers there with the delivery. Is they're like,
yeah, I mean,
he's just,
you know,
kind of a
and
dick.
And now he's been indefinitely suspended,
right.
which is such a horseshit reaction.
It is. Yeah.
They goaded him into saying this,
right?
Because of course, you know, every morning on Morning Joe is like its own private little cocktail party. You know, they goad one of their little boy toys into saying something really, really stupid and mildly offensive, but really not all that offensive on the air. And then of course they hang him out to dry because it's MSNBC.
That's right.
And that's what MSNBC does when you say something that that one person gets pissy about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my reaction to it is this. I mean, my initial reaction was, what a jagoff. Here's Halperin again.
Yeah.
Halperin again, you know, trying to seem like he's, you know, for lack of a better phrase, fair and balanced, you know. But then, you know what? I thought about this.
And even worse, edgy.
Yeah, that's
Halperin,
right.
Halperin couldn't be edgy if you gave him a fucking mohawk and took him to see a Black Flag show.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
By the way, as I just referenced something from like, you know, 30 years ago, which isn't edgy at all now.
Right. But, you know.
Straight down for that one.
I think that's exactly right. I think it's just such a pathetic attempt to be edgy. And it's just so indicative of his personality. But at the same time, I was actually kind of glad to hear him say it out loud, to finally get get it from his mouth, something that isn't just some you know, douching it up, both sides meme, some kind of ridiculous. Well, on the one hand, he's terrible. On the other hand, he's good. You know, just this sort of milk toast, watered down, tepid.
It would have been nice if he'd stuck by it.
Yeah.
But it's the really offensive thing, and I write about this all the time. I have a real problem with our sort of our cultural quickness to outrage and the way we, you know, there is a sort of kabuki theater that we all go through whenever somebody gets offended in this country, which is two people complain. It turns into a few more people complain. The person who supposedly said the offensive thing says, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry." You know, you can insert any name here. The most recent being Tracy Morgan. Sorry, sorry, sorry. Please don't take my livelihood away. You know, and it's all theater. It's all contrition is theater, and it's all a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
And obviously Halperin's contrition is absolute horseshit.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be because he came right out and said at the very beginning, "I'm going to say something really, you know, dickish," quite frankly.
Yeah.
You know, "I'm going to say something really awful here." And then, of course, he turns around when he gets, you know, when MSNBC threatens to give him the axe for good. "Well, you know what? I shouldn't have said that." Well, yeah, you shouldn't have. But you also had Mika and Joe, you know, like two tittering little 12-year-olds, you know, goading you on to say it.
Yeah, right. You know, what they do is they suspend these people over the wrong things. What they ought to do, Mark Halperin ought to be suspended for being so horribly wrong all the time. He gets suspended for calling the president a dick. I mean, that's ridiculous. These guys say horribly inaccurate things on a daily basis. That's what they ought to be suspended about.
I agree. But, the other thing, what's even worse about that is that at least being wrong, you know, weathermen are wrong. Political prognostication is like anything else. I mean, I do think that after a while, if you're wrong all the time, you have to ask the question, what the hell are you doing on television?
Exactly.
Why do I listen? Why do I pay any attention to you? But, you know, there is still a sort of subjectiveness to that, to being, you know, to saying something that some people consider right, some people consider wrong. You know, it is politics. I get it. There's a little bit of, you know, there's a sliding scale there. But there are people who go on TV and on the radio, the Rush Limbaughs of the world. And actually, believe it or not, I'm sure that if I looked it up, the Halperins of the world who have out and out, you know, flat out lied about things. Yeah. And that's acceptable. Mm-hmm. That is the one and only thing that as a broadcaster you should not be able to get away with. It is inexcusable. You should be held accountable for, which is out and out lying. And it is the one sort of objectively measurable thing. And people do it all the time and they never get in trouble for it. Yeah. And Mark Halperin gets in trouble because he called the president jokingly a dick.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So, I mean, the contradiction here is that, you know, he suggests that, you know, the McCain campaign paint the president as being a terrorist infiltrator in the White House, and he gets a book deal.
Which is a hell of a lot worse than calling him a dick.
Exactly right. And he gets a book deal. I mean, his coverage of the campaign resulted in a book deal, for God's sake, which turned into a movie on HBO. And then he calls the president a dick, suspended indefinitely. Yep. Wrong.
Yeah. I can't remember who said that. Somebody today that I read said, you know, it's part of the new sort of faux civility that we've adopted. And
exactly.
It is. It's absolute. It's pretend civility. It's horseshit civility.
That's right.
I would rather hear somebody come out and say, "Oh, yeah, total prick." Mm-hmm. You know, I thought he was, you know.
That's right.
I don't consider what Halperin said, and I don't really particularly like Halperin, and I do actually kind of like Obama, but I don't have an issue. I don't think that there is – I'm not the least bit offended. Like you said, Jagoff, I'm not the least bit offended with him calling the president a dick. I don't think he's demeaning the office or anything like that because first of all, part of it you have to consider where it's coming from. And Halperin is kind of a hacky political pundit. If it were coming from – if Joe Wilson stood up in the middle of the State of the Union address and yelled dick – that would be a different story. That to me would be incredibly disrespectful. Mm. Just saying the president's a dick. How many of us have said that about a dozen different presidents? It's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, lying, or you know, like I said, lying about somebody, or like you said, getting, you know, suggesting that you say something, that you bring up a quality that is just evil as shit machinations behind the scene to sort of play against against the otherness of Obama. That's wrong. That's disrespectful. That's shitty.
Yeah, on top of being as insanely inaccurate as you can. I mean, this is a guy who was writing for Time magazine and basically saying that, yeah, by the way, President Obama's he's a terrorist because his middle name is Hussein. I mean, you can't get any more wrong than that. And that's the sort of thing that ought to be clamped down on a little more than this sort of nonsense, which, again, as you said, is a consequence of this sort of faux civility that's sort of risen up, but only as we kind of predicted.
Listening to Scarborough's reaction to it really was classic. I mean, the immediate turning on his quote unquote friend. Just what did you? I can't believe you just said that. Never mind that I just told you to say that.
That's
if
right.
I had known you were going to say "dick" as opposed to something else that would need a 7-second delay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know what it's like? It was like that Bill Cosby sketch where he talks about making chocolate cake for his kids for breakfast. Right. You know, they demanded chocolate cake. And so he gave them chocolate cake for breakfast. And then when his wife comes down and says, why did you give them chocolate cake? He says, and the kids lied on him and said, Dad, we wanted cereal and milk. And Dad made us eat this.
Right.
Right.
It would have been great if Scarborough had said, you know, I didn't think you were going to call him a dick. I thought you were going to call him a cocksucker or something like that. You know, that would have been okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, despicable jungle bunny or something, some really horrible racist thing.
Yeah. I mean, but this is what happens. I mean, we kind of predicted this when this whole idea of civility popped up, which, you know, we've experienced. I think some of us have experienced it firsthand. I don't want to get into details about it, but certainly there are new restrictions all over the place, even beyond cable news. We'll just leave it at that. But I think, you know, it's something that has happened exclusively on the left, as predicted. Fox News Channel, on the other hand, continues with the same kind of awfulness. Talk radio continues with the same kind of awfulness. And here we are.
They continue to lie.
Exactly. They continue to lie, make things up, repeat Republican talking points all night long, all day long, and with impunity. And meanwhile, someone on a we'll just for the sake of argument call it a leftward leaning network calls the president a dick and they're suspended. Or, you know, Ed Schultz says something not even on his TV show, on a different show in a different format entirely, and he's suspended. You know,
I'm not a fan of. I mean, I'm not really a fan of Ed Schultz, but no, I admit I go 100% behind what Rachel Maddow said about that.
Yeah.
About, you know. I've written about this a thousand times about how the Democrats, those who lean to the left, are their own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they do sometimes. I mean, there's nothing wrong with trying to sort of stick to your ideals, but a lot of times we enforce, anybody who's not the right enforces ideals on ourselves that wind up shooting us in the foot.
Yeah.
You know, because the other side's not doing that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I hate to go back this far in time, but it was, you know, in 2004, you know, Howard Dean loses New Hampshire big time and gets up and delivers a speech. And in the context of that speech, he makes a peculiar hooting noise.
Yeah.
and suddenly, not only did the press fry him for that, but Democrats laid into him for that. Oh, good Lord. What? Howard Dean's crazy. He just made a peculiar hooting sound into a microphone.
It's very well put. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Are you serious? And so
Democrats
hang him out
are their own worst enemy. They always have been. It's a terrible thing to say, but it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, nobody can snatch defeat from the jaws of the most assured victory like Democrats.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, we're way over time now, and we got to get to a little more Bubble Genius here. And then probably my favorite story of the day in just a second.
Cool.
My favorite story of the day. Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never seen before. They've got something for everyone from guys to girls to kitties to expectant mothers and even your dog. They even have a few things for your home. They have decorative soap, body products, fragrances, pet products, and their political poodoo dolls, which are like voodoo dolls filled with fake poop. as
oh,
every good voodoo doll should be filled with shit. And the old idea is people like Glenn Beck are full of shit. Get it? Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable or reusable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption. By not having their stuff shipped from across the globe, they do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable. And their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants. And here, evidently, are the Bubble Genius ladies just call a spade a spade, stoned.
Ah! Who are you? And what are you doing in my bathroom?
Relax, dude. It's just me. I'm trying on my new mustache soaps for size.
What the?
Yeah, it's my new stash box mustache soaps from Bubble Genius. See? Look at this one. Oh, hello, my darling. Do you admire my sexy stash?
Dude, you're a weirdo.
Nah, it's fun. Here, see for yourself. Try this one on for size.
Oh, fine. Well, howdy, ma'am. Y'all know where I can hitch up my horse at? this is a neato one. I'd like to discuss the molecular structure of soap, please. These soapy stashes are spectacular.
See, I told you, super fun, and they smell great and lather up like crazy. Those Bubble Geniuses got it going on.
Stash Box Mustache Soaps, a set of four fun soaps for good, clean fun. This and other amazing vegan-friendly bath and body products only from Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
No, it's not. Why does he keep saying that? I gotta tell Buzz to make some new liners. You know what? To be perfectly honest with you, Buzz did record some brand new bumpers for the show because neither Elvis nor I live in the same place geographically, so that at the top of the show, it used to say something to the effect of from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. Well, that was no longer valid because I'm not in Pennsylvania and Elvis is not in Nebraska. And so I had him, I had Buzz from the Mike O'Mara show create brand new bumpers that were geographically ambiguous. And so so I had those ready to go for today, but unnecessary. Unnecessary and inaccurate anymore. So,
instead, you brought on a co-host who's sexually ambiguous.
So the promo code again is Bob and Elvis, BobandElvis, and you get 15% off your entire order at BubbleGenius.com. And now, my favorite story of the day, and it has very little to do with politics, but it certainly has a lot to do with the media. This is great. And I'm quoting from the Huffington Post here. Looks like the sting tactic that made Chris Hansen famous may have back to bite him big time. The National Enquirer is reporting that they've caught the To Catch a Predator host cheating on his wife with Kristen Cadell, a Florida NBC affiliate news reporter, 21 years his junior, with a hidden camera. Hansen is married with two children and lives in Connecticut. Chris Hansen, you know, I think Chris Hansen is hysterical when he is confronting these two Catch a Predator people. You know, basically they have, if you've never seen To Catch a Predator, it's like sometimes they show it on MSNBC after the prison documentaries or on Dateline. And Chris Hansen basically sets up these sting operations for online sexual predators, guys who stalk women online and mainly underage women. And then has them come to a house and they walk into this kitchen and they're waiting around, sometimes completely naked. And then out of the next room pops Chris Hansen, usually with the phrase, "What do you think you're doing here?" And then, you know,
Chris Hansen is his turtleneck of justice.
That's exactly right. What do you think you're doing here? And what are you doing with that cat?
Why don't you sit on right there? Why don't you have a seat there? You want something to drink?
What is another drink? Would you like a cookie? Why?
There is, by the way, there is no better way to pass like an afternoon than to go through, just Google the Chris Hansen soundboards and just make phone calls to people. Oh my God, those are the best things ever.
They are. They really are. Have you ever used?
Are you saying you want to taste me?
And then when he reads the chat transcript.
Yeah, exactly. Guys, I'm big.
Should I take it out for you? Right. You're saying this to an underage. You're having illegal sex with an underage girl. You know, and then he gets into the chat transcripts, which is great. I wish I had a few of them to read in my Chris Hansen voice, which I'll walk around the house just doing, you know, the Chris Hansen voice routinely. It's like, wait, we're out of coffee. There's no more coffee here. Why is there no more coffee? I thought I just bought coffee. And it gets really annoying, and, you know, then I end up sleeping on the lawn. So this is kind of great. This is kind of, well, it's like, I don't know how great it is. It's just funny. This is funny, Chris Hansen getting caught.
Irony is a dish best served cold.
I mean, if you're a guy who made your living, you know, capturing people on hidden cameras, scamming them, getting them caught in, you know, these hidden camera sort of sting operations.
Wouldn't you know, doesn't that make you acutely aware of when you're being set up?
I hope when he left wherever he was filmed with this mistress, I hope a guy in one of those big, you know, sort of snuffleupagus, you know, kind of camo suits leapt out of a bush and tackled him to the ground. I mean, that would...
I don't know whether or not I want to take the time to go through the entire thing again. I posted something, an extended, or it's a repost actually, of something that I wrote about To Catch a Predator a long time ago. My issue with To Catch a Predator is, number one, a lot of, like, some obscene statistic, basically, that most of the people that they bust there don't actually, there are never any charges brought brought against them. And more, basically, I mean, the problem with To Catch a Predator is the last people you want meeting out justice are television producers. Trust me on that. You know, these are people who, you know, TV producers are such an amoral bunch. You know, I'm surprised that Hansen hasn't busted a couple of television producers during the To Catch a Predator gig. I'm not going to run down the entire reason why I have major issues with To Catch a Predator, but it's all posted at my blog, Deus Ex Malcontent. Feel free to read it. But yeah, I mean, the only thing I will say is that I always waited. I was desperate for that one moment when on To Catch a Predator. When, you know, he sits somebody down and Hansen says, "Oh, you know, why don't you have a seat right there?" And the guy immediately jumps up and says, "Actually, Chris Hansen, I'm here for you because I'm from ABC's To Catch a Hack Journalist."
Oh, that's great. And that would have been probably the only thing that would be better and more ironic than... the National Enquirer catching him cheating on his wife. On tape. And I'm wondering if they're ever going to release... Oh, sure, they're going to release the video.
Probably.
They have to. They have to release the video.
It will be fun.
And I hope whoever was with the National Enquirer was wearing a turtleneck of ultimate justice. Well, Chez Pazienza from Deus Ex Malcontent, thank you so much for jumping in here at the last minute. And
thank you. It's been fun.
And helping out with the show. Definitely go and check out Chez's blog at deusexmalcontent.com. He's on Twitter at Chez Pazienza.
This is my one phone call. I have to go back to Gen Pop now. They're waiting to rape me.
And definitely download his memoir. It's also there. You can download it at his blog. And you can actually find a link to his blog from my blog. So it's right over there on the right under the Banter Media Group. So anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with me. You fudge with the best. We'll be back. I'll be back with either Chez or someone else next week.
And, vote for me.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.